Welcome to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. We have a cracker of a show for you tonight, gals and gents. Wash your black heads, grab a seat, and enjoy this sexy episode of X-1, entitled And the Moon Be Still as Bright.
Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction, presents
X minus one.
Tonight, the Ray Bradbury story entitled, And the Moon Be Still as Bright.
The first three expeditions for Mars left Earth in a mushroom of flame, arced through the atmosphere, and finally dwindled to tiny specks in the big eye of the Mount Palomar telescope, and then were lost to sight forever. The prearranged landing signals flashed back to Earth, and then the radios went dead. One after the other, ships had disappeared and were never heard from again. But still, the rockets came. The fourth expedition emerged from the silent gulfs of space, angled down toward the floating red disk of Mars, down into an orbit as the order came to land. The last blast of the bow jets broke red against the blue desert sands, and the ship slid to a halt at the edge of a vast city that reflected the icy glare of the moonlight. For a while, all was still.
All right, Park Hill. Open the airlock.
Hi, sir.
Fresh air.
Hey, it's cold out here.
Who cares? We got here. I thought I'd never hit solid ground again.
Hey, how about a fire, Captain Wildey? It's freezing.
Later. We have work to do.
Oh, smell that air. Well, you could get drunk on it. Say, there's an idea. Why don't we break out a bottle and celebrate?
Biggs, there will be no drinking done till we're secured.
But we're landed, Captain.
Three other expeditions landed and disappeared within 24 hours. Now, we're not relaxing security till we find out what happened to them.
What do you mean? Maybe Martians?
Sender, you're an archaeologist. How old would you say they are?
I can't tell till I study them more closely. It's the kind of engineering we couldn't duplicate on Earth.
Well, I'm not interested in the architecture now. I want to make sure there's nothing there that might be dangerous. Mr. Hathaway.
Yes, sir?
I want you and Spender to take a reconnaissance party into the city and find out what's there. We've set up camp here. No man is to go more than 50 feet from this rocket. And there'll be no celebration till Hathaway and his party report back.
In the sea bottoms, the wind stirred along faint vapors, and from the mountains, great stone visages looked upon the silvery rocket and the small fire. The sky was black overhead, as the two racing moons threw knife-edged double shadows on the desert.
All right, come and get it. Ciao.
Hey, what do you got to eat, Jackie?
Soda smothered in cold chicken fat.
Good. I thought it was something I couldn't eat.
Crazy.
Hey, Captain. Mr. Hathaway's back.
Oh, Captain. Captain Wilder.
Oh, yes, over here, Mr. Hathaway. Well?
Most of the city's dead. Spender says it's been dead a good many thousand years, but we found one part about a mile over
what
toward
about
the...
it?
People were living in it last week, sir.
People?
Martians.
Where are they now?
Dead. We found bodies, thousands of bodies. They hadn't been dead more than 10 days.
What did they die of?
You won't believe it.
What killed them?
Chicken pox.
Chicken pox?
Yes.
Where could they get chickenpox?
From Earth.
Oh, then the other rockets did get through.
Yes. I don't know what the Martians did to them, but I sure know what they did to the Martians. They gave them chickenpox and wiped them out. They just didn't have any resistance to an Earth disease.
Think of it, Captain. A race builds itself for 1,000,000 years, refines itself, does everything it can to give itself respect and beauty, and then it dies. Of what? It's like saying the Greeks died of mumps or the proud Roman Empire collapsed because of athlete's foot. We didn't even give them a decent excuse for dying. We just gave them chicken pox.
Spender, get hold of yourself.
You didn't see those bodies, Captain.
Yes, I know. It must have been a shock. You need a rest, a little relaxation. The Martians are dead. There's nothing you can do about that now.
Hey, you hear that? Yeah. The Martians are all dead. Come on, let's break out a bottle and hoop it up. Hey, how about a case, hey?
Good Lord. They have to do that now? Isn't there time later to throw old beer cans into the canals?
Bender, you're an idealist. They're not. All they know now is that they're safe. A little shouting won't hurt. You think too much.
I was safe on Mars! The first Earthmen on Mars! We're gonna celebrate! Yahoo!
Twenty bottles were opened and drunk. The voices got louder. The Earth laughs and shouts echoing across the empty Martian sands. Spender listened to the wind over his ears, cool and whispering. He felt the land getting cooler. The stars drew closer, very near. The air smelled clean and new. He looked at the cool ice of the white Martian buildings over there on the empty sea lands.
Oh, what a woman! Hey, what do we do with these empty bottles?
Save them, stupid. There's a 2 cents deposit.
Throw them away. Hey, wait. How about that building? 2 to 1 on a buck. I can heave one right through that window.
You're up.
All right, here goes. Hey! All done. Hey, double or nothing on the next shot.
Put that bottle down, Biggs.
Who's there, Mr. Spender?
Stop smashing those windows.
What's the difference? The planet's ours now. I guess I can do anything with it I want.
Drop that bottle or I'll knock your teeth out.
Yeah? And just watch me.
I warned you, big...
Hey, what? Hey, come on, come on, come on.
Hey, what's going on here?
Spender! I hit him.
He's crazy, Captain. He just walked up and slugged me.
All right, Biggs. Spender, you come with me. Now, suppose you explain. What was the idea?
The noise, the drunken brawl.
Spender, the men are tired. This has been a long trip. And you have a different way of seeing things.
No, I'm seeing things, all right. I'm seeing how we'll ruin Mars. We'll rip it up and rip the skin off the way we've already ruined Earth.
Is that why you hit Biggs?
Yes. I couldn't stand the idea of them watching us make fools of ourselves.
Them?
The Martians.
They're dead. They're all dead.
But they know we're here. Doesn't an old thing always know when a new thing comes? We've come a long way to smash their windows and spit in their wine.
Well, maybe you're right. But I'm still going to fine you $50 for that fight. Now, come on, Spender. Suck in your chin. We'll go back there and play happy.
Now they moved out into the moonlight across the desert. They made their way into the dreaming, dead city. The light of the racing twin moons glinted on the barrel of a pistol, the long blade of a machete, the round, gurgling shape of a raised bottle. The wind blew in from the dead sea bottom and brushed through the silvery wire filigree of the towers. Strange music drifted down to the double-shadowed streets, a thin, haunted music that played as it had played through the uncounted years of time. Nobody moved. The moons held and froze them. The wind beat slowly around them.
Hey! Hey, you people in the city!
Biggs,
I just want to make a little noise. What kind of a celebration is this, anyway?
Come on.
They built this city thousands of years ago. And now where are they? How did they die?
Who cares? They're dead. That's good enough for me.
Lord Byron.
What?
Lord Byron, a 19th century poet. He wrote a poem that fits this city. Might have been written by the last Martian poet. So we'll go no more a-roving so late into the night. Though the heart be still as loving, though the moon be still as bright. For the sword outwears its sheath, and the soul outwears its breast. And the heart must pause to breathe, and love itself must rest. Though the night was made for loving, and the day returns too soon, yet we'll go no more a-roving by the light of the moon.
Without a word, the Earthmen stood in the center of the city. It was a clear night. There was not a sound except the music of the wind. At their feet lay a tile court worked into the shapes of ancient animals and images. They stood there, silvered by the double moons beneath the crystal towers of Mars. And then Biggs was sick, and the sour stench of liquor filled the cool air. The men of Earth had come to Mars. And Spender turned and walked away into the city, alone in the moonlight, never once stopping to look back. It was a morning that might have been a Monday, or a Tuesday, or any day on Mars. Biggs was on the canal rim, his feet hung down in the cool water, soaking, while he took the sun in his face.
Hey, what are you doing back here, Biggs? Didn't you go out with the search party?
Yeah. I come back. I got a blister.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What do you mean? Look. Look, Cherokee. See that? Anyway, I had enough searching. 4 days hunting for that screwball Spender.
Didn't find him yet, huh?
Oh, good riddance. Oh, my feet. I'm going to soak them in the canal. If I was Wilder, I wouldn't worry about that nut Spender. Let him go. He's a crackpot anyway.
Well, he's a little foggy upstairs, I guess. Hey, why don't you take your feet out of that canal, Biggs? I got to make coffee out of that water.
Coffee? You call that stuff coffee? I had a motorcycle once that dripped grease that tasted better than...
Hey, wait a minute, Biggs. Hey, look over there.
Where?
By that bush. There's someone there.
Hey.
It's him. Hey. Hey, Spender!
Spender?
He's coming over.
Why'd he stay lost, that crazy jerk?
Hi, Spender. Long time no see.
Hello, Cherokee. I've been exploring some ruins.
Oh, you and them ruins. You're like a dog in a boneyard. What's the matter? Why don't you just say something? Where you been?
Up in the hills. What would you say if I told you I found a Martian?
Oh, yeah?
Where?
Never mind. Let me ask you a question. How would you feel if you were a Martian and people came to your land and started to tear it up?
I know how I'd feel. I've got Cherokee blood in me. My grandfather told me a lot of things about the way they kicked the Indians around in the Oklahoma Territory. If there's any Martian around, I'm all for him.
How about you, Biggs?
They're dead. They're all dead. It's a good thing, too.
Well, I found a Martian. Up in a dead town in the hills. I've been reading their books, and they're easy to understand. And I've learned their language. And then I found this Martian. And I brought him here, now.
I don't see no Martian.
I'm the last Martian.
What did you say?
Biggs, I'm going to kill you.
Oh, cut it out. What kind of a lousy joke is that? And I don't... Now, don't. Put that gun away. You're kidding, huh? Spender, you're...
He's dead. You killed him.
You can come with me, Cherokee. You're an Indian. You know how the Martians would feel. You can be with me in this.
You killed him. You just killed him.
He deserved it.
You're crazy.
Maybe I am. But you can come with me.
Come with you for what? Go on, get out of here, you crazy murderer.
Of all of them, I thought you'd understand. I thought you'd remember what happened to your own people.
You get out of here, you crazy murdering...
Don't reach for that gun!
Spender. Spender!
Hathaway,
Break out the arms locker. Issue pistols, rifles, and grenades.
Yes, sir.
And you'd better get the Bible out of the navigation chest. We have to bury these two. Now, Parker, you start digging a grave,
How about Spender?
We'll have to go up in the hills and find him.
Just let me at him with my bare hands, a crazy murdering louse.
That's enough, Parker. The man is sick. He must be...
Sick, my eye!
That's enough! Now grab a shovel and start digging.
Spender saw the thin dust rising in the valley, and he knew the pursuit was beginning. The sun burned farther up the sky, and the blue sand drifted lazily across the sea bottom below. He sat beside a quiet pool 10,000 years old and held a silver book. Through the house played the strange wind music of ancient Mars, and he heard voices whisper in his mind.
I hear you. I've always heard you, even down there on Earth.
Run.
I won't run. What's the use?
Live, Earthman. Live.
What for? To see them tear down your temples and put up hot dog stands?
Run.
They see me now. They know I'm up here.
Live.
There's Wilder now. I've got him right in my sights.
Kill, Earthman.
Funny, he hasn't ordered them to use grenades. They could lob one right up here and blow me to bits. Yeah, maybe the captain thinks I'm too nice to be blown to bits. He wants my death to be clean. Just one bullet hole in me, nothing messy. And why? Because he understands me.
Kill.
The only one in the crew who ever did.
Kill.
Well, at least I can do the same for him. Just one bullet in his head, a nice clean death. All I have to do is pull the trigger and then... It's no use. I can't do it to him.
Spender! Can you hear me, Spender?
I hear you, Captain. What do you want?
Talk! Truth!
All right. Come on up. Leave your gun down there and keep your hands up.
Well, that's quite a climb. You mind if I sit down? How long do you think you can hold out?
Until you're all dead.
Now, why didn't you kill all of us this morning when you had the chance? You could have.
I know. I got sick. I started killing people. I realized they were just fools and I shouldn't be killing them, but it was too late. So I came up here where I could get angry again.
Why did you do it?
When I was a kid, my folks took me to visit Mexico City. And I'll always remember the way my father acted, loud and big. And my mother didn't like the people because she thought they didn't wash enough. I can see my mother and my father coming to Mars and acting the same way. Anything that's strange is no good to us. We aren't fit to take over this planet.
But to kill two men.
How would you feel if a Martian spit on the White House floor?
You know, you haven't acted very civilized yourself today.
I'll kill you all off, Wilder. That'll delay the next rocket 5 years, and then I'll kill them too. And if I'm lucky, I'll live to be 60. And I'll meet every expedition that lands on Mars. Oh, I'll be very friendly. I'll explain our rocket blew up one day. And then I'll kill them off. And I'll save Mars for half a century. And by then, maybe the Earth people will give up.
And yet you're outnumbered. We already have you surrounded. In an hour, you will be dead.
I found an underground passage that'll take me back in the hills, Wilder. I'll go back there. And then I'll pick you off one by one.
We'll see. Well, it's a nice town you've got here, Spender. It's beautiful. I'd like to live here.
You can. Join me. You're not like them. Why go back to them, Captain? I'll show you what a good life these people had.
No, there's too much Earth blood in me. I may even agree with you about all this, but that does not change what I must do.
You won't stay?
No. This is your last chance, Spender. Look, you're sick. Now come along with me quietly.
No. One last thing. If you win, do me a favor. Try to see that they don't tear this planet apart.
Right.
And if it helps, just think of me as a very crazy fellow who went berserk one summer day. Be easier on you that way.
Now I'll think that over. So long, Spender.
Bye, Captain. Good luck.
The men spread out again, walking and then running on the hot hillside places where there would be sudden cool grottos that smelled of moss and sudden open blasting places that smelled of sun or stone. The men ran and ducked and ran and squatted in the shadows.
I'll blow his brains!
Captain Wilder hugged the rock warmed by the sun. He gasped, for the air was thin and not meant for running. Spender lay at the top of the hill, and a gap in the rocks showed the white of his shirt against the shadows. Wilder looked at the towers of the little clean Martian village, like sharply carved chess pieces lying in the afternoon. He saw the rocks and the interval between where Spender's chest was revealed.
Go on, Spender, get out. We've only got a few seconds to escape. Go on, get out of the caves. Come back later. You go now. I've got to win this. I've got to think that I'm right. Pull this trigger. Go now. Get out.
I'll get him! A slug in the head, I'll blow his bloody brain!
No, Parkhill! Put down that gun! I'll do this myself.
Spender. Why didn't you get out? Why? Why? Why?
They buried him in that ancient valley town, where the music of the wind played on through the days and the nights. They laid him in an ancient silver sarcophagus with waxes and wines which were 10,000 years old, his hands folded on his chest. The last they saw of him was his peaceful face in the cold silver light of the racing twin moons. The captain found the poem in Spender's pocket, and he read it before he shut the marble door.
So we'll go no more a-roving so late into the night. Though the heart be still as loving and the moon be still as bright. Though the night was made for loving and the day returns too soon. Yet we'll go no more a-roving by the light of the moon.
The next afternoon, Parkhill did some target practice in one of the dead cities, shooting out the crystal windows and blowing the tops off the fragile towers. Captain Wilder caught Parkhill and nearly knocked his teeth out.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you the Ray Bradbury story, And the Moon Be Still as Bright, adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were John Larkin, Clark Gordon, Dick Hamilton, Nelson Olmsted, Lawrence Kerr, and Stan Early. Your narrator was Norman Rose. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production. X-1.
Drunk kids driving around in machines will be the death of me, Madam Fish. Welcome back to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Now enjoy this episode of the Black Museum, entitled The Pair of Spectacles.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. The Black Museum. A repository of death. A museum of murder. Yes, here in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide, where everyday objects, a portable typewriter, a jack for an automobile, an ice pick, all are touched by murder. Here's a pair of spectacles. It's a familiar object, neat, not too large, tortoiseshell frames with gold tops. You've seen them 100 times on girls who obviously have decided that they must wear glasses. They'll make the glasses as decorative as possible, but this pair...
Women's glasses, right on top in the suitcase.
And pretty thoroughly smashed. Poor Daisy.
Something, whatever it was, must have hit her awfully hard to smash her spectacles like this.
Today... Now today, those spectacles can be seen in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum. In just a moment, you will hear the Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. Museum, starring Orson Welles.
Now here we are in the Black Museum, Scotland Yard's Museum of Murder. Yes, here lies death. Who died by these objects? The dead, named here on the white labels with the black lettering, or the killers, named in equal place, in equal size, wherever they are known. A mandolin string. Here we are, sir. Made for music, a mandolin string. Stretch it across the top of a stairway, see it blend and disappear into the dark carpet background. Stretch it ankle high and listen in the dark for the sound of falling. Sound of murder. Here's a French novel, a romance, with a blackened perforation in the center of the pages where the bullet passed, which ended romance. Now, here we are, the spectacles. Rather pathetic spectacles. The lenses are cracked, the frame twisted and bent, the gilt tarnished. Many other things were tarnished, including a man's reputation, by the chain of events which began that morning when Mrs. Oliver came to see Inspector Laswell, the yard.
I understand, Mrs. Oliver. Perhaps your daughter thought she'd let you know, but didn't after all.
I wish I could believe that, Inspector, but I can't. Daisy was so determined when she left that night.
And since she went to the train, you've heard nothing?
I wired Ron. I never liked him. Something, I don't know, I thought my Daisy'd do better for herself than a chicken farmer. Anyway, I wired, asked him if Daisy was there. I received this in reply, Inspector.
Thought Daisy coming Saturday, not Friday. Went to meet her, not there. Letter follows. Ron Smith. This was Last Saturday?
Yes. I wired on Monday. This answer came back the same day. The letter came in yesterday, Wednesday.
Oh, thank you. Dear Mrs. Oliver, you do not know how shocked I am. Daisy missing since Friday afternoon. This is really terrible. She wrote asking me to meet her Saturday. I went...
The heartsick words of a worried man, the tone and feeling of the letter, plus the fear and the tears of the mother, sent Inspector Caswell to Larkspur in Sussex, the nearest town to Wren Smith's chicken farm, the railway terminal for the area. He turned first to that prime source of all rural information, the local pub.
Evening, landlord. Pint of beer, please.
Yes, sir, of course.
Haven't I seen you someplace before, my good man?
What? Oh, Jack Sheen. You have seen me someplace before. Drink up, man. It's good to see a familiar face.
A familiar face drawn by a familiar scent.
You're not down here on business.
I am. And so are you.
No, I wanted to keep this quiet for a while, anyway.
With that crowd over at the dartboard? Your old-time friends, Caswell. Morton of the Times, Alsop of the Guardian, Durr of the News, and yours truly.
You fellows have a sense of smell of a ferret.
We have to. It's our living. Do you think the girl is dead, Caswell?
There it was, words of one syllable, literally one syllable. Do you think the girl is dead? Inspector Caswell shrugged and turned to his drink. Without apparent effort, he drifted into conversation with the landlord while Jack Sheen stood by, quietly, unobtrusively.
Have there been any talk hereabouts recently about a girl who's missing?
Some?
Well... girls get silly ideas sometimes, especially the young ones.
Only silly thing about this girl was the man she went for.
Huh?
They get that way sometimes, even the best of them.
Oh, I know what you mean. Anything wrong with the man in it?
Ne'er do well. Owes for feed. Everything in sight. Lives in a hut on his farm. Not even a proper house.
Oh, that's her?
This Oliver girl now. Bright, sweet as they come. Real pert in them fancy glasses she always wore. Then, off the deep end over this Smith fella. Never know why they do it.
Whereabouts is this chicken farm?
Right fork east. Second right after the fork. You're thinking of going up there?
Oh, I might drop over. Tell the girl's mother I'd look around. Maybe talk to Smith. From his letters, he's pretty well upset himself.
Him? Upset her with that girl? Not much. What's happened to your friend?
My friend? Why, he was just... Five will get you ten, landlord. My friend is halfway there by now.
Inspector Caswell was absolutely right. Jack Sheen was well up the right fork and turning into the lane that led to Ron Smith's chicken farm.
Who's there? I said, who's there?
I'm Jack Sheen of the London Daily Post. I'd like to talk to you.
What makes you think I want to talk to you?
Oh, most people talk to me. If they don't, I usually write what I think they might have said. Very simple.
Smart, aren't you?
I know my business, I hope. Fellows down in the village suggest you don't.
Yeah, they like to talk.
Don't you?
Not about things that ain't my business.
Daisy Oliver is your business.
She was.
Meaning, exactly?
Daisy said she was coming down last Friday. I left my gate unlocked, like you found it tonight. She was always touchy about that.
She never came, though.
That's right. Now, all this talk. I'm more worried about her than I ought to be. Nancy's going to make a fuss about that pretty soon.
Nancy? Well?
A girl, Nancy Noble, lives up the road a piece. Her and me have been walking out lately. Daisy knew. I figured she'd be coming down like she wrote on account.
Apparently, Mr. Ron Smith, chicken farmer, was as garrulous in his way as his hands were in theirs. He clucked on at great rate. Finally, Jack Sheen got away, scribbled a bit in his notebook, and then off to sleep. The next morning, quite early.
Hello there.
What? Oh, you startled me.
You don't look as if you scare easy.
I don't. Who are you walking into a barn like this behind a busy girl's back?
A fellow who thinks you'd make a better wife for Ron Smith than some frail little girl from the city.
You know your way around, don't you?
There was banter and introductions. Nancy was quite flattered, of course, over the visit of a reporter. She talked.
Sure, I met Daisy.
Like her?
All right. If you go for milksops.
I see. I heard Ron was going to marry her right after Christmas.
Not if he could break the engagement, he wasn't. He's all set to marry me.
Oh, so that's the way the wind blows, huh?
It sure does. Or did. Now, with all the fuss over Daisy disappearing, well, Ron's too upset even to think, I guess.
Upset, is he?
He told me, night before last. He's afraid she's killed herself.
So Daisy may be dead. And Ron is afraid she may have committed suicide. Well, Jack Sheen has turned up a fact or two, hasn't he? Of course, Inspector Caswell hasn't been inactive.
Mr. Jeffrey, I'm told by our host, the landlord, that you think you saw the Oliver girl last Friday night.
I think so. I was coming up the road, out past the fork. My place is out past, Smith's. There was a girl ahead of me. She turned to look back. I thought I saw her wearing spectacles.
Is that all?
Well, she must have turned in at Smith's. She didn't pass my place. Reed here saw her real close.
Did you, Mr. Reed?
Yes, sir. I met Jeffrey on the road. I was coming down to the water of the village after fixing the septic tank out to Jeffrey's place. Girl passed real close. The Oliver girl, all right. Wearing her specs and carrying a suitcase.
Ah, that's right. She had a suitcase like she walked out from the train. Why, the Smith fella didn't go in and meet her.
Then there was the routine visit to the cottage where Daisy usually stayed when she was in Larkspur.
Did you hear from Miss Oliver, ma'am, that she was coming down here this past Friday?
She didn't. And she always tailed me. If she'd planned to come down, well, you never know, what with young girls being so free nowadays. And she had spent all her savings on these trips. She told me that last time she was here.
Well, when was that?
Oh, about 2 months ago. She seemed so nervous, poor thing. Even then, you know, jumpy, always a little scared, like a rabbit, sort of. Oh, I don't know, I wish I didn't keep thinking.
And finally, there was Edith Staple. Miss Staple had a friend in the outlying area, and Miss Staple had been crossing a field near the chicken farm, a kind of shortcut.
Yes, Inspector, I'm positive I saw her. I saw two men on the road, too. One passed her. The men met, talked a little, and went on. By the time I passed the lane to Smith's place, she was in as far as the first shed.
You saw quite a bit, didn't you?
The road is on a little rise just there. I was coming up to it, and everyone was, well, sort of outlined against the sky.
Well, thank you, Miss Staple. Thank you very much.
There must have been a girl. 9 chances out of 10, it was Daisy Oliver. But how to prove it? Where had she disappeared to? Inspector Caswell and Jack Sheen compared notes. They stayed around Larkspur. That fact alone started the talk, which had impetus enough in any case.
People don't just disappear, I tell you. She must be somewhere.
She turned into Smith's place. Want to bet she never came out?
Nice girls don't take chances going alone to men's homes, even when they're more decent than the hut he lives in.
They'll get him, you'll see. He did the girl in. Want a bet?
The talk reached Smith, of course. On the heels of the talk came Jack Sheen.
Nice lot of chickens you've got here, Smith.
You didn't come out here to talk about chickens.
No? What then?
You're trying to get more on Daisy and me.
The town has plenty on you, they think.
Yeah, long tongues. They wag too much.
You can stop them, you know, quite easily.
How, I'd like to know.
Oh, just ask Inspector Caswell to bring his crew out here to dig up your farm. They'll find nothing. That'll stop the talk.
I'll do it. They can dig any place they want. Except I wouldn't want them to disturb my chickens.
The remarks were duly reported to the inspector. His comment was,
"We'll be glad not to disturb his chickens."
I should think that's exactly what you would do.
Oh, I don't know a thing about chickens, except roasted.
Look, he was rather pointed about it, you know. "Don't disturb my chickens." You know, if I were you, Caswell, I'd do some digging around that chicken run. Might save you a lot of extra trouble. You catch on, Inspector?
The inspector caught on to the extent of asking Ron Smith to drop in at the police station while Jeffrey and Reed and a few of the others with Jack Sheen began their digging.
Not much good this ground.
Good enough for chickens.
Got something?
No, just a rotten stick. Nothing suspicious like.
There's something here.
Yes, I'd say you had something there. Lift out your shovel, Jeffrey.
Okay.
Now, look, I'm going to open it. I want you to witness that I neither take out nor put in any object. Ready?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, okay, now just watch this.
It's the girl's suitcase, all right. I'd know those specs any place.
Well, today those spectacles can be found in the Black Museum.
In just a moment, we will continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. And now we continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
It was her suitcase. Yes, there it was, the earth of the chicken run clinging to its freight handle, its shabby sides. Jack Sheen stopped the digging, sent Reed pell-mell for the inspector.
Women's glasses, right on top in the suitcase.
And pretty thoroughly smashed. Poor Daisy.
Something, whatever it was, must have hit her awfully hard to smash her spectacles like this.
Shall we go on, Inspector?
Digging? Of course. Carefully. We don't want the edges of the spades to disfigure anything.
The first thing they found was part of the torso. And the limbs wrapped in sacking. Finally, the head in a tin box, buried shallowly in the chicken run.
I've had enough. Are we through?
Sorry, I didn't have a regular police crew for this. Now you can go along. And thanks. You too, Mr. Reed.
Where's Smith?
At your local police station, where Mr. Sheen and I will be interviewing him in a very short while.
They interviewed him. It was quite simple at first. I gave him the facts.
We've found her, Smith, thanks to Mr. Sheen here and the strong arms of some of your neighbors. Well, what have you to say? First, I must warn you that anything you may say may be taken down in writing and used as evidence. Now, go ahead.
I didn't kill her. I didn't.
That's only a beginning.
She came down on Friday to have it out with me. She was so nervous, she was all twitchy. She said she wouldn't leave my place until we'd set a date for the wedding. But she knew about Nancy, she knew that. We had a row, a real hard row. Well, I guess I gave in. I said the 27th of December, right after Christmas. Then I promised I'd tell Nancy that night. And Daisy wasn't satisfied until I'd gone right out looking for Nancy. I couldn't find her. I came back and Daisy was hanging from the beam in my hat. She must have jumped from the table. It was awful.
What did you do? Why didn't you go for help, a doctor?
Well, I cut her down first. I thought there might be some life left.
Did you try artificial respiration?
And as soon as I got her on the bed, I saw it was no use.
But you still didn't call anybody.
I was afraid. I panicked. I thought they wouldn't believe me. They'd all think I killed her and try to make it look like suicide.
So you buried her?
Yes, in the morning.
But you cut her up first. You deliberately dismembered the body in an attempt...
Have you ever tried to dispose of a body? True, a body is 76% water, but... Have you ever tried to get rid of one? It's almost impossible to burn without special apparatus. Burying it leaves it intact. What do you do? Find a lime pit? Even that isn't foolproof. What do you do?
After you knew she was dead, you still wrote letters to her home.
I couldn't stop doing that. If people were to believe that I hadn't killed her myself.
May I, Inspector?
Of course, Jack.
What about these?
Her glasses. You found them, too.
How did they get this way?
Well, they must have fallen off when I cut her down. I suppose I stepped on them or something. Her head hit the table as I was carrying her to the bed. I couldn't believe Daisy was gone.
Smith couldn't believe she was dead. Jack Sheen and Inspector Caswell couldn't believe other items.
It doesn't fit, Caswell. It doesn't.
What's bothering you about it?
Look, a girl who's just been told her wedding date doesn't hang herself in the next half hour.
Oh, I saw that. I sent his shoes down to London to the laboratory. If he did step on those glasses, there'll be bits of glass on the soles or heels.
I'm no doctor, Caswell, but did you notice any rope marks on the neck?
I didn't. I have sent for one of the medical examiners. We'll know all about that very soon.
They held Smith on an open charge. The least would be an illegal burial and failure to notify the proper authorities. Meanwhile, Sir Harold Hubert, one of the Yard's best medical men, came to Larkspur. He worked. He made his report.
The girl did not die of strangulation, gentlemen.
What was that? She didn't.
There's a slight discoloration of the throat, but that was probably caused after death.
Well, what did she die from, then?
Shock. Caused by the multiple bruises all over her body. That girl was beaten to death.
Now the questions descended on Sir Harold's head in a deluge.
No sign of strangulation at all.
She may have been partially hung. There's congestion of the blood vessels of the throat.
But she didn't die up there.
If she was hung at all, she was alive when she was cut down.
What else could have caused the congestion in the throat?
Manual strangulation. Or she could have been knocked down, as is a logical assumption in this situation.
Did you knock her down and step on her throat, Smith?
Of course not. How could I have when she was hanging as I entered the building?
You're certain she was hanging and dead?
I know she was hanging. I'm as sure as I can be that she was dead.
All right. Take him back to the cell.
There it was. The expert said no hanging. The man accused contradicted that statement at every turn. Once again, the inspector and Jack Sheen went out to the chicken farm.
What are you up to?
Give me a boost. Up onto the table.
Okay. Now what?
I'm not going to hang myself. Come on up. I think it'll hold both of us.
All right. Here I come. Huh. Not the safest perch in the world. Okay, now what?
Look here. Along the beam.
What a filthy animal. Didn't Smith ever clean his place?
Maybe it's just as well he never did.
Look, I don't get it.
He said a dozen times he found her hanging. If a rope passed over this beam, as Smith maintains...
The dust up here would show the marks.
You see any marks, old boy?
Not a thing. Not even a bit of rope fiber.
Sir Harold is right. No death by strangulation. Not by any rope which passed over this beam. I wonder how friend Smith is...
Smith did his best to explain the matter. In fact, he did a trifle better than his best. That's possible.
The rope must have caught in the joists. She didn't weigh very much.
And by the way, where is the rope?
I burned it. It gave me the willies.
What kind of rope was it?
Ordinary hemp rope.
Not sash cord?
No, hemp.
What did you intend it for?
Oh, no special purpose. You always have rope around a farm.
Inspector Caswell reminded Mr. Smith quite tersely.
Hemp rope leaves its fibers caught in rough wood when it's passed over the wood. There's no sign of fibers or any mark in the dust.
Well, then the dust settled back after I took her down.
How did you take her down?
I lifted her with one arm and freed the rope with the other.
Now, let's go back to the beginning, Smith. When did you first see her that night?
Oh, she came to the gate. It was locked. She called. I let her in. We argued. Then we made up, and I went to tell Nancy. When I came back...
Hadn't you better keep the story straight, Smith?
That is the story.
You said before you cut her down. You told Mr. Sheen you left the gate open, because finding it closed upset her always.
Then I made a mistake.
Oh, you made a mistake, all right. You made your story much too involved. You see, the laboratory has reported on your shoes. Not only are there no bits of glass in them, proving you did not step on them, but There are traces of lipstick on one and traces of contact with human skin on both. I submit, and I shall so state to the jury at your trial, that you attacked the girl with force and violence, that you smashed her glasses on the table, that you beat and kicked her into insensibility and death. Your story tripped you and the laboratory did the rest. I'd say, Smith, next time, keep it simple. But I doubt if there'll be any next time for you.
Well, today, those spectacles can be seen in the Black Museum.
Orson Welles will be back with you in just a moment. Now here in person is Orson Welles.
Exactly how Daisy Oliver met her death was never brought out, not even at the trial. Whether Ron Smith beat her to death or whether she fell to her death, no one knows. But she was murdered, and by Ron Smith, there's no reasonable doubt about that. Nor was there any doubt about this man's character. Not only did he write of his concern over her disappearance to Daisy's mother, not only did he write long, endearing love letters to a girl he knew was dead, but from his cell, as he awaited trial, he sent a wreath to her funeral, palm leaves and one lily, with the phrase attached, "Until we meet again." I wonder if they ever did meet again. Well, until next time, till we meet in the same place, and I tell you another story about the Black Museum, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
Thank you for listening to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at LGAB.com. Now, stay tuned for the Sasquatch Report.